And the second of tonight's speakers, Jessica.
My name is Jessica, and I'm a recovering addict.
Hi, Jessica.
Arthur, I really want to thank you for your share. It was really powerful. You said some things I could really identify with. Bit of a disclaimer for anybody that's new to the shop here, new to Narcotics Anonymous. I always like to make it really clear that myself and my cohort sitting here at the table are not the leaders of Narcotics Anonymous. Some people are going to be very devastated by this disclaimer. Definitely not the CEO. Not the president. I'm not the queen, although I do like the ring HRHNA has. I'm just an addict, just like you, who has the absolute same equal opportunity to recovery that every single person in this room has. I am fraught with my own challenges, as well as that equal opportunity to recovery. And I always like to make that really clear, and the longer I stay clean, the more clear I feel I need to make it. It's really easy, and I know when I first got clean, I walked into an NA meeting, and I just naturally assumed that people sitting at the table were running the show. I didn't realize it was a circus and that nobody was in charge at the time. And I also really liked putting people with clean time up on pedestals. And when they fell from them, as we are often wont to do, I found it really difficult and earth-shattering. And the reality is that I am, just like you, perfectly imperfect in every possible way. And that my recovery, I glean more recovery from the times that I have spectacularly failed. And I mean found myself face down in the arena, covered in blood, dust, tears, and snot, as some of my greatest recovery come from the days where I thought I was the poster child for NA. The learning is in the mess, very often, for me. And I've only been asked here to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not here to tell you how you should work your program, what set of steps you should use, who your sponsor should be, none of that shit. And I know I'm not supposed to curse, but we're well beyond that point. All I've been asked to do is share my experience, strength, and hope. And if you can get something out of that, wonderful. If not, come back to tomorrow night, and there's a whole new set of characters on the stage telling their own experience, strength, and hope. And eventually, you'll hear something that you can identify with, if you are indeed in the right place. When I first got clean, we said things like, you don't come to NA from having a bad weekend. And times have kind of changed. And luckily, because of some of the amazing work we've done in public information and public relations, people like judges and barristers and courts do send us people. Sometimes it can be simply from one DUI, which I have no idea how you guys call that in this country. Same, good. So somebody can actually possibly wind up in a room on a Friday night in a shelter like us, listening to this, that might not be an addict. You know what the greatest thing is? I'm not here to tell you if you are or not. And nobody else in this room can identify whether or not the person sitting next to them is an addict or not. Our literature is incredibly clear on that. And I can tell you from my own experience that when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, not only did I think that, I knew I was an addict, but I didn't think I needed a program like this, for sure. I definitely didn't think I needed people like you in my life. And I definitely had absolutely no plan on staying here beyond the bare minimum. And I always share this because the other thing that none of us know is which one of us is actually going to get this thing, whatever that means. When I moved into a recovery house 27 days out of a rehab, people were taking bets that I wouldn't stay. And you know where my money was? On the not stay pile too. I'm the only person in that house that still has the same clean date. Not any of us know which one of us is going to get this thing. And that equality that comes from that we're all here fighting the good fight together with absolutely no idea who's going to win, is a beautiful, gorgeous thing. And it means I have to wake up every single day, that all I have is just this day, just for today, to try my best to stay clean. It's been a really interesting year. It's kind of hard not on the last Friday of the year to be a little reflective. I know that for some of you, you did something so radical to the norm this year. You walked out on a certain day and planted your flag, and that was your clean day. For the first time in a really, really, really long time, you woke up and you stayed clean. And that is an unbelievable feat. And some of you came back to reclaim a new clean day. And that is an incredible, brave feat. The shame is not coming back in here to say I've relapsed and I'm back. The damn shame is staying out there in the grips of addiction. And this year, we also saw some people depart us. There was great loss up until even just yesterday. And some people left because they were caught up in the grips of the disease of addiction. And we know that it leads to one of three places, and not always in this order: jails, institutions, and death. And other people, after fighting a very successful battle for many, many years of mental health, the suffering became too much to bear for even another day. And other people whose bodies just gave out. The vessel could not carry them any longer. And so I wanted to just allow us to take a really brief moment. And you can hold this sacred space however it works for you. It can be a moment of mourning. For me, it's a moment of celebration and honoring the people that I've known, that I've met since moving here, that I know are no longer in this fellowship anymore, no longer walking the earth with us. So I invite you to take that moment and use it. I know I'm going to be conjuring up the most hilarious moments that I can think of with that person. Thank you for that. This year, I have done some shit that has scared the bejesus out of me. I have dared to be seen in a way that was absolutely terrifying to me. And I finally broke a really paralyzing dynamic. And I don't know if anybody can identify with this, right? Like, I did some things, despite how fearful I was, what people would think or say when I did them. And I did some things even when people were telling me that I would be amazing doing those things. Let me explain. I often stay stuck between lovely people who tell me, you're wonderful, fabulous, you should do these things. And what they say doesn't matter enough for me to take the risk to do those things. Because I'm so worried about what the rest of the people are going to do, say, and think. And I stay stuck in that place. And I found myself at one point this year about to hit the post button. You know, I started this whole business and I went to hit the post button. And I swear to God, I found myself thinking and hesitating, what is my ex-boyfriend from 20 years ago going to think if he sees this post? This is what I was concerned about. And with lots of time clean and lots of step work under my belt, I still found myself in that paralyzing place of shame and fear and self-centered fear, the core of our disease, just reveling itself in a whole new way, saying, you're not good enough once again. Who do you think you are? What gives you the right to do, say, and be these glorious things? What are other people going to think? And yet, not caring what the people who love me and know me think enough to take their word for it and go do these things. And this year has been an amazing year of me breaking free of some of that really paralyzing stuff. If you ask me what's the one thing that I don't want to get to the end of my life and think, I can tell you right now, and it's always been, that I'm going to look back at my life with regret. That I didn't do enough of the things. Not all the things. We can't do all the things. But I didn't do enough of the things. And I have to tell you that I do. I have moments in my life where I look back at beautiful opportunities earned by me, given and earned by me, that I didn't take because I was too afraid because I didn't believe I was truly worthy or good enough or perfect enough. And this is a conversation I was having with a sponsee earlier today. Could we all just give ourselves the grace of stopping expecting perfection from one another, something that is absolutely unattainable, and yet throwing all of our toys out of the pram when somebody else doesn't live up to our expectations or when we don't live up to our own? This expectation of being perfect, of doing it right, recovery right, work right, relationships right, all of it right, in its proper place, when the universe is chaos. That's an absolute impossibility. And I found myself really struggling with that quite a bit this year, being vulnerable enough to be seen, brave enough to be seen, and resilient enough for when the haters come and the trolls troll. Because that's what they do. Haters hate and trolls troll. That's what they do. They don't do anything else but that. So I can have the expectation that they will come and they will hate and they will troll, and to be okay with that. And I'm really proud that I was able to stand up for me pretty much against myself. Because it's really not what you're saying. Let me tell you something. There is no comment that can ever be dropped on any thread anywhere. It will pale in comparison to the comments I drop on my own thread in my mind. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the mean girl shit talking that I do to myself inside my own head is nobody has ever spoken to me like that. Nobody, the most abusive people in my life have never harmed me the way that I've harmed myself throughout the course of my life, both in and out of recovery. And I'm so grateful because it's the steps that have allowed me the coping skills to live, to love, and to be loved like never before. I don't know if my parents just failed unequivocally to give me these coping skills. I can tell you, I did not learn them. I don't know if school failed to give me these coping skills. I just know that by the time I was 19 years old and I was at the bottom of my addiction and I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I did not know how to live. I did not know how to live and exist in my own skin. And I didn't know how to love and be loved at all. In fact, I was terrible at it, really terrible at it. And the steps, you know, my first experience with the steps, listen, it was all about like getting clean, staying clean, holding on for dear life, right? Like what the unmanageability was tied directly to my active addiction with the use of drugs. Having stayed here for quite some time, I realized that the disease wears many masks, right? And that the most obvious symptom was the drugs. But unfortunately, it ain't the only symptom. Putting down the drugs has not made me well. And anybody that has ever sat in a home group business meeting will tell you, and there's quite a few in this meeting tonight, will tell you that that definitely has not made me well. I can definitively tell you that anybody that's dated me, including the husband that willingly married me, will tell you that that didn't, you know, putting down drugs did not make me well. The steps of what have made me a better person will have allowed me to move with a completely different mindset and heart set in this world today. It's that first step. It's that ability to surrender, to even have the self-awareness that there's a problem at all, that what I'm doing may not necessarily be the kindest, most loving thing I've ever done for myself or another human being. And when I'm left with that admission, right, in a society that expects perfection, when I have to admit that I am definitely not perfect, that leaves a really painful void for me. I'm not telling your story. It leaves a really painful void for me. What does that mean if I'm not good enough? And for me, that second step, that hope that it offers me, that I can come to believe that there's another way, that my way definitely sucks, but it doesn't mean that I'm left with no options at all. That there are other people who are living beautiful lives, who are touching other people, who also can be an asshole on any given day, just like me. And that hope that I get for that second step is incredibly powerful. I don't know what I'd do without it. And from I'm talking about from the moment I came in here, I knew I was an addict. And it wasn't that I hated you. It wasn't that I thought the program didn't work. I didn't think I was worth getting clean for. I didn't think I was worth being helped. I just thought so lowly of myself. And Arthur was talking about self-love. What? You know, like I was so bereft of kindness or care, let alone any type of love for myself, that I didn't think that you should even let me in. That surely I would poison a place like this. So that hope that gives me, that I can come to believe that if it's worked for you and if you've gotten better, and let me tell you, I've seen some sick people in here get better. And that gave me a lot of hope. And it was those same people, like the ones that came in that felt like, you know, you ever see that person that walks in the meet and you're like, oh God, it's like they're floated in here in the lotus position. You know, like that bastard, who do they think? And then you see them actually behave badly. And I gotta tell you something, when you do that, oh perfect recovery you, I am so relieved. And I tell this to my sponsees all the time, you cannot save your face and your ass at the same time. You're not here to come and share at a meeting, like, yeah, we're here to carry the message and share the hope. But sometimes we've got to pull down our pants and show everybody our ass because we're in trouble. And I have to tell you, those are the times that I get hope, because at some point, everybody's ass is going to be on fire here. And if none of us are sharing the struggle and how we got through the other side, then we're going to get to that place our disease loves, right? And my disease loves when I think I'm tragically unique. Nobody knows the trouble I see. Nobody's as bad as me. Nobody's ever gone through this. Nobody's ever had this happen to them. I love that stuff. And my disease uses that to back me into a corner I can't stay clean in. And unfortunately, I can't even use my way out of that corner either, which is why I'm here. So these steps have really allowed me, and this past year has been really amazing, because I've gotten to really dredge up some stuff that's still not resolved. Some fears that I have, some, you know, just kind of like, it's one thing for me to come in, I've been here in NA long enough that I kind of walk in like I own the place. And in many ways, right, membership comes with some ownership. I've spent quite so many years helping to build this house. So I do kind of like, right, like I walk in, and I'm like, this is my house. And I don't really give a fuck what a lot of people in NA think about me. But let me tell you something, that's a small little society. And when I had to be like, ba-bow, here I am, starting some business and starting to record live videos. Oh my God, you can't take that back. That's on the internet forever. Like, it was terrifying. Really terrifying. And realizing that there was this kind of like wall between this compartmentalizing that I had in the different areas of my life, and that those walls, very similar to the walls I built out from a very young kid, right, weren't a fortress. They weren't a castle. They weren't a fortress. They were a prison. And I don't know what your fourth and fifth step was like for you, but I can tell you, for me, I spent most of my childhood building a very elaborate castle of fantasy, which I then shifted very early on to fortress mode. This was a place of utmost protection. Thick walls, right? And then I started putting bars in the window, and I really thought I was doing it to keep people like you out. And in the end of my addiction, it was a prison that I could not break free from. And it was dark, and it was damp, and it was terrible. And my fourth and fifth step was about busting open those doors and actually going back into that prison with a candle into every single room to try to look in the corners, try to look in the corners, as barely as illuminated as I could my first round of four and five, to see what I could see and to see how I could really start to dissemble and rebuild something new. And I've realized that that thing that I thought I was so free from, this prison, this fortress, was still there. It was a much smaller size, but there was still part of it that was saying, you're safer in here than you're going to be out there, even if it means being stuck and not doing the things that you really want to do. And I'm really grateful for my sponsor, for the program, and for other addicts. Like, seeing you shoot up like little stars into the sky and sparkle, and some of you crash and burn, and then get up and dust yourself up and push all over again, gives me the hope that I need that I can do it as well. And, you know, it's a lot of the work that I've been doing on myself and with other people this year is a lot around vulnerability and around breaking free of shame and about self-love. So I'm really glad that, you know, Arthur brought that up, because the reality was is that I spent most of my life like trying to find somebody, desperately really, trying to find somebody who was going to be able to love me. And the reality is that I wouldn't have the first clue to tell you how to do that. And if I don't know, if I don't love myself or even know how to best care and love for myself, how am I going to offer even the most basic of instruction for someone else? And that was what was missing from so many of my relationships, romantic and otherwise. So I was constantly walking in with all these incredibly unmet expectations. I mean, holler if you can identify, right? Like, why can't, you know, you're not doing it right. Well, tell me what to do. You should just be able to figure that out. You should just know. You know, like, why, you know, how do you... And the reality was is that, like, I didn't even know. So spending a lot of the last year learning how it is I best receive love by first and foremost starting with me and showing other people how to do the same thing. And to see that result really kind of flood out in my life is really magical. And that works really well for me for about 8 months out of the year. You know? And when I say that is like, this time of the year has really become very difficult for me. What was a very mild case of something they call seasonal depression disorder, whatever the fuck they call it, right? When I lived in New York, thanks British winters at dark at 3:30, has accelerated since moving here over the last few years. And it is like, I don't know if I'm getting any better at it. I know I'm collecting more tools to use. Like, I know all the things I'm supposed to be doing, but actually getting up in the morning and doing them is incredibly difficult. And it's been really a struggle. And the first couple of years, I didn't want to tell any of you about it. I think the second year I was living here, I had to call my husband in the middle of the day on a weekday, and he had to come home from his work, leave his job, come home, and literally scrape me up off of the floor in this puddle of tears I was in. And he's like, did you call this person or that person? He's not in recovery. He's like, did you call this one? And I said, I can't call anybody. And he's like, why? Like, I can't tell anybody that I've got X amount of years clean and I feel like this. And I believe that with my whole heart. So this year and last year, but really this year, like I'm turning up the house lights on sharing this stuff more openly. Maybe it's gonna help somebody else, but really, I just need to pull down my pants and show you my ass. Because it's dragging. You know, it's really dragging and it's really difficult. And I have to let people know that I love, like, hey, I see you calling. And please let me, I want to let you know, I'm not picking up and I'm not getting back to you, but it's not because I don't love you. It's because I'm like in this little glass box and it's really difficult. And even though I know a million things, right? Like if I got up every morning and I did yoga and I actually took my fat ass to the fucking gym and I did this and I read and I meditated and I listened to my God, I've got tools upon tools upon tools. And every night I go to bed and I think, tomorrow's going to be the day. Tomorrow's gonna be the day. And then at 3:30 in the morning, I'm up like a crackhead watching, binging eight seasons of The Walking Dead, you know, and then it's like, well, now I'm really tired, so I gotta sleep until 11 or 12. And then, you know, it's like this viciousness, and it's like, I don't have the answers to this. I just know that it's hard. And I keep telling myself, right, because I love fantasy. I still love a bit of fantasy. So what I keep saying is one day, when my business takes off, and I have an assistant, and I spend a month or 2 months in India or Thailand, this will no longer be a problem. And I'm asking you to allow me to hold on to that fantasy a little bit longer. But in the interim, until that happens, right, like I need to learn, I need help, and I need to let people see me not just succeed, but face down in the arena, covered in blood and dust, and struggling. And this has been a year of doing that and being okay with it. And that's beyond my wildest dreams. All the things that I've done in my life, the places I've gone, the people I see, and the travels I've done, you know, I mean, just the, I've done some amazing stuff. All the money I've made, all the money I've lost, all the money I've made, all that stuff, right? Like, all was amazing. But two greatest gifts was, one, that my skin now fits on my body like a couture glove. And I gotta tell you, I spent years trying to scrape it off my body to give it away because I just was in so much pain. And that happened finally when I had about 10 years clean. Like, I just realized that I fit in my body. And that was some 11-step shit. The second greatest gift is that I'm finally able to really, truly be seen for better or for worse and feel okay with that. And okay with what you think of me. And like, you know, I know a bunch of you are going to be really gorgeous and beautiful, and you're probably going to try to call me tomorrow. And I tell you, if I don't pick up, please let me. I just want to say thank you in advance. Because it does mean something, even if I'm just tapping up against the... I have my face. This is me with my palms and my little nose scrunched up to the glass. So I appreciate you coming and putting your palms up and your nose to my nose on that glass as well. And, you know, if you're new, please keep coming back. I wouldn't still be here for two things, right? Like, I was doing my four-step and I realized, like, if I hadn't found drugs, I probably would have killed myself. That's just reality, right? And then if I hadn't found NA, I'd also be dead. So, you know, this is the program that keeps me alive and on most days thriving. Thriving, which is very different than just surviving. But right now, I'm kind of, in some areas, I'm surviving. So please keep coming. And if you're feeling like you're not thriving, you're just surviving, and is this as good as it gets, you're in the right place. And if you're here, you know, thriving like, you know, a sparkly unicorn farting rainbows, fantastic. You're still in the right place. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.